This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo, episode 55. Coming up on today's show, Ukrainians see crimes. All that and more on the way on Still Standing.
No talking points, no spin. It's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Thanks for your time. I appreciate it that you'd take a chance on this podcast and listen while you're in your car or while you're on the treadmill or whatever you do and however you do it. Big week this week. It seems like, of course, I've said this a million times, every week is a big week with Donald Trump. But now that the Democrats are, you know, following their get Trump strategy, their destroy Trump strategy, we now have a trial in the Senate, which is absolutely unwatchable. I've tried to watch it, and I'm a political animal, an addict. You know, I mainline American politics, and it's just not watchable. I think even me and people like me who are absolutely addicted to this stuff, who examine the minutiae of all of this, I'm just over it. I can imagine what people, well, actually, I don't really have to imagine. I talk to my family who are from middle America, Ohio, you know, Missouri areas, or, you know, in the, you know, the flyover country, and they are over it. Even the ones who don't support Donald Trump are shaking their heads and they can't believe this is going on. And now that we've reached the Senate, you know, the upper body, as the senators like to call themselves, it's gotten so absolutely redundant and boring, and the Democrats with their gambits to try to introduce new evidence and witnesses, it's really, it's come to a point where I think I understand what's going on, and that's why I wanted to get a podcast out today. Of all days, because it's been announced, and I'm really proud to tell you that One American News Network Saturday and Sunday, I guess it's the 25th and 26th of January, this Saturday and Sunday, and then forthcoming Saturdays and Sundays in the future, OAN will be airing my documentary film, OAN Investigates the Ukraine Hoax with Michael Caputo. It's really quite something. I've really enjoyed making the film, and I made that film in you know, kind of in parallel to writing a book of the same name, because what's going on in this get Trump strategy and the destroy Trump strategy is something that I saw coming for a while. I didn't see it being exactly a Ukrainian excuse, but it could have been Albanian or, you know, Bahamian. It wouldn't matter, you know. They would destroy a country or a, I don't know, archipelago, whatever. Whatever gets, you know, gets them via to Donald Trump, they will trample on it and go about their business destroying the president. And by destroying the president, of course, they're destroying our country, and really, even though we will recover as a country from this impeachment, they are also destroying Ukraine. And this is where our government has lost its way in so many ways, but this way in particular. They've lost the idea of collateral damage and what it truly means. Our government has become inhuman in their political agendas. Republican as well as Democrat, but right now we're seeing the Democrats flexing, and it's funny to say that when the Republicans, you know, hold the administration, Trump controls the White House, but the Republicans control the Senate, the higher body, the upper body of the Congress, and the Democrats only have the lowly House, but they seem to be in the driver's seat all the time, and that's because they're ultimately far more aggressive and reliably more they'll go further to achieve their goals than Republicans will. They'll do more. They'll hurt whoever it takes. And in this case, it's Ukraine. In the first stage of the Get Trump strategy, the people what they destroyed were families, 50 of them, mine included. I won't go into that. But in the second phase of the Get Trump strategy, they're going to destroy Ukraine. I'm quite certain of it, and that's why I wrote this book and I shot this movie. It's funny because even though now that it's been announced and this conspiracy theorists will abound as to why Michael Caputo is doing a film and a book about Ukraine, the bottom line is, ladies and gentlemen, I did the Ukraine hoax, the film and the book, because I'm married to Ukraine. I have family in Ukraine. My wife, I met her there, working there. I worked there over the years many times. My first time working in Ukraine was 1994. I consider my, you know, Ukraine my second home and my family's second home. It's a country that I care about very much, but it's also, it's hard to say, but a good friend of mine in Ukraine, who's a senior politician, told me that he would very much like that Ukraine would become a subject of American foreign policy, not an object of American foreign policy. He would like Ukraine to be regarded as a topic that's worth discussing and debating and finalizing and agreeing upon, rather than just a pawn or a, you know, parcheesi piece that the Americans and the Russians move around at will. I understand exactly what that's about. I get that. You know, Ukraine is, you know, even the name means in between. It's the bridge between Russia and the West, and whoever controls it makes the other half uncomfortable. And the idea of a modern foreign policy in many times is to keep your potential adversaries uncomfortable. So by the United States controlling Ukraine ever since the former Soviet Union fell apart, Russia has been off balance, and Russia will never become great as they were of old until they control Ukraine. And pretty much everybody understands that. So Ukraine has become a pawn. From my perspective, and the reason why I did this book is because I understand the history of this. This didn't just happen with a telephone call between two presidents. It didn't. This whole Ukraine problem, America's whole Ukraine problem, started years and years ago, and it ended up with mass murder. And people don't understand that. They don't understand that on the way to making millions of dollars on the board of directors of Burisma, Hunter Biden, to getting the United States, you know, Ukraine a relationship to the point where the vice president's son could settle comfortably into a multi-million dollar position at the largest gas company in Ukraine. Along that way, 130 people were killed. 100 of them assassinated in 20 minutes. In 20 minutes on the Maidan Square in Kyiv in February of 2014. And all kinds of crap went down during that time. We had the Ukraine that we had, the Ukraine that would hire Hunter Biden in the dark and behind the biggest, most corrupt company, one of the most corrupt companies in Ukraine, the Ukraine that would seek to meddle in America's elections in order to please the Obama administration and what they thought was going to be the incoming Clinton administration, the Ukraine that would do all of that. Favor the Obama-Biden group so much that they would make the vice president's son rich and do whatever they could to elect Hillary Clinton the choice of the White House in the 2016 elections. What put them in a place like that where Ukraine could be so corrupt that they would seek to favor Obama-Biden-Clinton so much that they would get so far afield of what's legal, what's proper, what's even the least bit appropriate? How would they become so, you know, wrong? How could they go so far off the reservation, outside the norms of international behavior, diplomacy? And I think that story is important to tell. I do. What went on from 1991, when Ukraine really started becoming independent, through all the presidencies that were installed, and how America and the West and Russia trying to screw it all up, Russia competing with the West right there in downtown Kyiv every single day in the halls of the politics of Ukraine, that gave birth eventually to the kind of administration that would bribe a vice president's son and get involved in the United States 2016 presidential elections. It's a story worth telling, and I tell it fairly well in the movie, but I realized as I was doing the film, a couple of things. First, I want to tell you, I was in Ukraine filming this documentary without any idea where I would put it, where I was going to go to sell it. I just had been involved in so many documentaries during the Russia hoax that I saw, you know, the Hunter Biden situation and the DNC, Ukrainian embassy, Leshenko, you know, black ledger complications that Ukraine President Petro Poroshenko threw at the 2016 American elections. I saw that as a story that nobody was telling. It was being told by good reporters like John Solomon and even New York Times reporter Ken Vogel and his partner David Stern at Politico. There's really brave journalists out there telling this story, but they really hadn't boiled it all, kind of synthesized it down to a 50-minute TV documentary. So I went over to shoot it. My family's there. I had a chance to visit with them. It was a nice time to be there in August 2019. But while I was there, everything was melting down between Ukraine and the United States officially. Quietly, but officially. It wasn't until I got home that the whole thing blew up and everybody, even me, started, you know, came to realize that the Democrats were using Trump's interaction with the president of Ukraine as a way to begin impeachment. When I realized that, I had a choice. I had done the shooting of the Ukraine film with the intention of doing a film that was interesting but wouldn't put me in harm's way. But here we are, the brand new focus of Get Trump Strategy Number 2, Phase 2, was going to be Ukraine, and my film was right in the middle of it, in the middle. My wife and I talked about it. I could just drop all of it, forget about it, you know, because my family's been through serious hell during the Russia hoax. You know, we went through $300,000+ in legal fees, House, Senate, Robert Mueller interrogations, you know, FBI outside my house, outside my office, going through my trash, following me around, getting my emails and telephone calls. You know, that was something we'd like to avoid in the future. You know, shooting a documentary about the issue that is splitting America apart, that is driving us toward an impeachment of the duly elected president, a highly partisan, completely partisan vote of impeachment. Going to do a film exactly about it. My wife and I both eventually agreed that it's not just perilous for us, because who knows what they're going to do to us for doing this film, but it's also topical, and it's an opportunity. And after 3 years of investigations on the Russia hoax, I thought it would be kind of poetic to ride out of that mess on the backs of the Ukraine hoax. Ironic, right? So my wife and I decided that we would do this, and I went forward and called the film Ukraine Hoax, The Ukraine Hoax. And everything is going to be at theukrainehoax.com. While I was doing the film, let's just say the film is 8,000 words, right? 50-minute film, you'd be surprised how few words are in there. Maybe 8,000 words, maybe it's 9, right? And I realized there was far more to this than I understood. Even when I was in Ukraine shooting it, I learned more when I got home researching this film. And I knew that there was enough wrong with this situation to warrant a book, even like a breaking news paperback, a book, something. So I talked to my publisher. I was in the middle of writing a book that I'm under contract for, kind of a memoir in the Mueller investigation in my life and what led me to it. We were calling it Putin 1 in draft. And my publisher, David Bernstein, over at Bombardier Books told me, stop writing that book, write a companion book to the film, and tell the people the details that you couldn't fit into the film. I said, sure. So I've been writing, working with with friends of mine, trying to get this thing together, all the marketing that goes with it, and it's launching on Monday. After OAN airs my film, The Ukraine Hoax, I'm so proud to be associated with OAN, and the people there have been great. Monday, I'll be selling my book in presale, The Ukraine Hoax, from Bombardier Books. It'll be available on Amazon on the 1st of March, but it'll be available through my in pre-sale through my website, theukrainehoax.com. There are things in that book and in the film which you see, I think you should know. And I am going to spend the next several months speaking to anyone that will listen about these facts. And for the next several months until people are tired of it. Because I believe this, you know, the president is right. This needs to be investigated. And just because someone decided to run for office doesn't make them immune from legitimate prosecution. Here's what I can tell you from what I know. I know I'm a Trump supporter. I get that. Some Fast Company senior editor I've never heard of before today called me a Trump hanger-on. Okay, whatever. I'm going to get insulted all the way through this process. I expect to be called a Russian agent because I'm furthering the Ukraine allegations against Biden and against the Ukraine, the former Ukrainian president, for interfering in our elections. And I'm going to be called an anti-Semite because I'm going through chapter and verse what George Soros has to do with all of this. I don't think he is behind all of this, but he is a character in, you know, in a cast of characters that we all need to be looking at. So I'll be called an anti-Semite, a Russia agent, and probably a Trump, you know, a Trump hanger-on. But it is what it is. I'm giving you the facts as I see them. I'm extremely experienced in that region. I'd call myself a specialist. I am definitely more informed about Ukraine than 99% of the people who will view my film, read my book, and address me about it. But there are many experts on this region, some of whom will disagree with me and who will criticize me publicly. I welcome that. But I have some things to say. And some of them I'm going to go through here on my podcast. I urge you to buy a copy of my book. Hey, I do see the irony of a victim of the Russia hoax riding back into the scene on the backs of a Ukraine hoax. But here we are. And I promise you, you will get information you will not get anywhere else. Well, I got to tell you, I have to salute John Solomon, who this John Solomon online. Long, you know, lifelong journalist. He has done incredible work and even got me more interested in this topic, even though I've spent so much time on the ground in Kyiv. I have Ukrainian mud between my toes. But Solomon, who I'm not sure if he's ever been there, certainly writes like he knows the place. And his reporting has been incredible, just like Ken Vogel, David Stern, Ken at the New York Times, David Stern at Politico, and several others. But I stand on the, you know, the shoulders of people who did real reporting to actually show this to you. So there's one thing I want to tell you. I'm going to take a quick break, but I want to talk to you about something on the other end. While I was researching this, I met and became colleagues with the former head of the Ukrainian FBI, the FBI director, you know, the Christopher Wray of Ukraine. Hopefully much better than Christopher Wray. But, you know, the Louis Free of Ukraine. I liked Louis Free, the Clinton's appointee to the FBI. He was a very strong head of our leading law enforcement organization. We should be wishing for Louis Free if he would ever come back. Heck, he was still young when he left. Maybe he would. But, and this gentleman's name is Valentin Nalivaychenko. Valentin Nalivaychenko was twice the head of the Ukrainian FBI. Neither time under this, you know, the Yanukovych, the kind of pro-Russia Ukrainian president who was overthrown in 2014 with the Maidan murders and the Maidan massacre. Not under them, under Poroshenko, the follow-on president after Yanukovych left, fled to Russia. Nalivaychenko's really defies political party, but he had something very interesting to say to me, and I think you should hear it. In fact, it is not in my movie. It is in my book, but this exchange that I had with Valentin Nalivaychenko is something you need to hear, something America needs to hear, something the Republicans in the Senate need to hear. Honestly, it's very serious. It's an accusation that warrants examination by the highest government authorities and the investigators of the federal government. But for right now, I'm going to take a quick break. This is Michael Caputo for Still Standing at stillstandingpodcast.com. Michael Caputo will be right back right after these messages.
Still Standing will be right back with Michael Caputo.
Hi, welcome back to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. Appreciate you sticking around. I'm Michael, as you already know. And remember, we're at stillstandingpodcast.com. There's my archive of about 54 other episodes and some video episodes, some blogging here and there. But I really focus on audio, the podcast version of this. Stillstandingpodcast.com. You can sign up there with your email address, and I'll notify you whenever there's a new one up. But I want to dive directly into this, and I think it's important, and I think it's newsworthy. And I'll tell you why. We have basic allegations out there from the president's side, allegations that I am firmly a believer of, that basically a couple of different things happened in Ukraine. The reason why the president wanted to investigate, wanted the Ukrainians to investigate is A, he believes that Joe Biden put his son Hunter Biden into a lucrative board seat in Ukraine, and he believes that something illegal may have happened there, and he wants Ukraine to get to the bottom of it on the Ukraine side. In addition to that, the president and many of his people, including me, believe that former President Petro Poroshenko, the president, the incumbent president, which the new president, Volodymyr Zelensky, beat in a springtime 2019 election, the former president, Petro Poroshenko, we believe, directed Ukrainian government officials to interfere in the United States election in cooperation with the United States Democrats. The president believes, A, the Bidens were in a scheme, and B, the Democrats and the Ukrainian presidential administration, predating the president, we're interfering in the United States elections. Two very serious allegations: corruption and interference. And I went after these things in my film and in my book. Initially, in my film, went to Ukraine to shoot it. And while I was writing the film and editing the film, I realized there's something really serious here. And some of the information I had was relatively new. One of the people I talked to is one of the most important people in Ukraine to speak to about criminal allegations. It's a very corrupt place. Hopefully it's going to get better. I don't want America to walk away from Ukraine because it is now infamously corrupt because of the impeachment rhetoric from the Democrats. But the former head, two-time head, of the equivalent of the Ukrainian FBI, the Ukrainian security services, Valentin Nalivaychenko, two-time director of the Ukrainian FBI. He's someone I know, someone I sat down and talked to. He's someone I trust. In fact, in a country where you hear corruption being talked about quite a bit and prosecution being politicized, etc., Valentin Nalivaychenko kind of stands head and shoulders above the rest. He is a law and order guy, a lawman, served twice in the FBI, both under reformers, not under the pro-Russian president that was thrown out in a coup in February 2014, but in the administration before him and the administration after him, including the Petro Poroshenko administration. His second stint as FBI director was under Petro Poroshenko. He's a reformist, Valentin Nalivaychenko is. And we've talked at great length about the Biden scam and the Poroshenko Democrat Ukraine election interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential elections. And after a while, we had a very interesting exchange, and I want you to hear his side of it. This is Valentin Nalivaychenko, the two-time director of the Ukrainian FBI.
Mr. Caputo, even on the camera or without it, we are talking about the truth. You please have no doubt that Valentin and Michael are now that's 100% transparently talking the truth. I am sure with even my signatures on this possible interference, I think you are right. Ex-President Poroshenko, one person. Then he, I think so, he involved and asked special services, special service of Ukraine, SBU, to take a part. Then he involved one of his MP from his fraction of the parliament, then Ukrainian embassy and many other Ukrainians, including NABU director, were involved in this, I think, criminal activity.
Again, Valentin Nalivaichenko led the FBI in Ukraine twice. That rarely happens in the United States and almost never happens in Ukraine. If you're in a very senior government position, you eventually end up getting thrown out or having to leave because of disagreements or corruption or whatever. And the former Soviet Union taking a leading government position like the federal police or the FBI in our parlance is it's fraught with peril. You either leave a goat or you leave a hero, and a lot more goats in Ukraine than heroes. So Nalivaichenko is very well respected still in Ukraine, very rare. Two terms as FBI director and now still viewed as an honest broker, a lawman's lawman, a law and order guy. He believes, he basically, remember, look at his quote, on this political appearance, Mr. Caputo, I think you're right, Poroshenko asked the special service of Ukraine to take part. To me, that's remarkable for the former FBI head in Ukraine to say that. He said that Poroshenko, the former president, then involved a member of his parliament faction, then the Ukrainian embassy in the United States, and many others, including the NABU director, this guy Sitnik, who created this bogus black ledger that ended up getting Paul Manafort fired in August of 2016. Really took took this wind out of the Trump campaign in mid-August 2016 because of this fake dossier. Let me tell you what it is, all right? We know that, number one, that the Ukrainian embassy was absolutely working with an agent of the Democratic National Committee named Alexandra Chalupa, an American-Ukrainian who was absolutely dead set a hater of Paul Manafort and therefore Donald Trump. And she was working with the officials at the Ukrainian embassy to get dirt on Paul Manafort, Donald Trump's campaign chairman. You know, we had nothing like that, no predicate like that. And we still had an investigation into whether the Trump campaign colluded with Russia to interfere in the U.S. 2016 elections. In fact, Chalupa admitted that she did it in a story written by the New York Times' Ken Vogel and David Stern, then both at Politico, in January 2017, before the president was even inaugurated. Stern and Vogel had the story that Chalupa was working with the Ukrainian embassy to get dirt on Trump's campaign manager. That is colluding with a foreign government to interfere in the American elections. She's admitted it. It's been covered in the mainstream media. It is clear as the nose on your face. So we know the embassy did this, and Nalivaichenko, the FBI director, former FBI director from Ukraine, has said in my interview that he thinks it should be investigated because he thinks this is real criminal activity. Real criminal activity. And then, of course, he speaks of the black ledger. Now, if you understand about kompromat, I'll tell you a little story about how people's reputations are ruined in the former Soviet Union, and it's been going on for many years. Shortly after meeting with the American, with the White House officials of Barack Obama in the national security sphere in the White House in mid-late January of 2016, the head of this NABU, this Sitnik, came up with the help of a member of parliament that reported to President Poroshenko this ledger that claimed to prove that Donald Trump's campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, had taken millions of dollars in illegal payments. that's been proven to be false. At the very least, we know that the ledger is likely to be proven false, but we don't know. The ledger, they never brought it out again. They never really showed anybody. They showed people pages, one page, I think, perhaps two. But Donald Trump's campaign chairman had to quit. Usually that would knock a candidate out of the box, at least for a week, but Donald Trump never missed a step. He went on to win the election anyway. But they thought by taking out the general that they might be able to disable the entire campaign, and it didn't work. But that was directed by the president of Ukraine. And the former FBI director of Ukraine, two-time director, one of the most respected lawmen in the country there, a member of parliament, is saying that this is criminal activity, that it needs to be proven out. So here's the thing. We know at the same time that Biden was very much involved in Ukraine. He was, quote, you know, the viceroy of Ukraine. Obama had made him the head of all things Ukraine for the Obama administration. He went back and forth. He installed his son on the most lucrative board seat in the gas company Burisma, one of the most lucrative corporate board seats in the world, and then proceeded to work to assure that an investigator targeting his son's employer was fired. Now, I discuss that as well in my book and in my film. But I'm focused right now on the fact that Valentin Nalivaychenko thinks there were crimes committed in Ukraine in coordination with Democrats in the United States. We also know that it's very likely, I mean, we know that Alexandra Chalupa of the Democratic National Committee was interacting with the folks over at Fusion GPS. And we know that Fusion GPS was advised to get involved with the member of parliament that reported to President Poroshenko, who'd created the black ledger. The web of deceit here is complex, but it's no more complex than the web they thought was being woven by the Trump campaign. These are credible predicates for investigation in the United States. We know that Alexandra Chalupa was working with a foreign government to tear down the Trump campaign. We know that for a fact. We have confessions in the media that, according to the Russia investigations of the Trump campaign, that was apparently a crime. So she needs to be investigated. What happened at the Ukrainian embassy on the American soil needs to be investigated as well, not just by America, but by Ukraine. Their ambassador and their embassy must be examined for what they did in 2016 to get involved and interfere in the American elections. But we must also look at American diplomats, because we understand that all the people involved in the bogus black ledger that got Paul Manafort fired were in the United States just a month or so before it was released, the ledger that was never authenticated. They were in the White House, and we have firsthand information that they were being encouraged to do things to dig up information on Paul Manafort. And a matter of days later, they announced this ledger, never proven to be authentic, which took out Paul Manafort. This points to the idea, and the timing is, you know, maybe it's coincidental. I can't believe that it would be. But if the Obama National Security Office, including the whistleblower, Eric Sia Ramella, was in this meeting in January of 2016. Just check out John Solomon if you don't have time to read my book or watch my movie. Solomon showed it. I'm telling you that the Obama National Security crew put Ukraine on the march toward getting more and more involved and interfering more and more in the American elections. This is a crime on the Ukrainian side, according to the two-time leader of the FBI there. And if it doesn't rate investigation in the United States, then nothing does. Then what has gone on for the last 3 years is a hilarious lie. And this is just about Ukrainian interference in the elections. Wait till you see what I have on Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden. Because Hunter Biden, I can show you the case that Hunter Biden broke federal law. That's my next that's going to be my next still standing episode. I'm going to go through how you know Hunter Biden broke the law. But here, if you listen one more time to Valentin Nalivaychenko, the two-time head of the Ukrainian FBI, tell you exactly what is the thought process in Ukraine. Let me give it to you one more time. It's just a few seconds. Listen up.
Mr. Caputo, even on the camera or without it, we are talking about the truth. You please have no doubt that Valentin and Michael are now that's 100% transparently talking the truth. I am sure with even my signatures on this possible interference, I think you are right. Ex-President Poroshenko, one person. Then he, I think so, he involved and asked special services, special service of Ukraine, SBU, to take a part. Then he involved one of his MP from his fraction of the parliament, then Ukrainian embassy, and many other Ukrainians, including NABU director, were involved in this, I think, criminal activity.
That sums it up right there. Valentin Nalivaychenko, by the way, is on Twitter. I think it's at Nalivaychenko. I'm gonna tag him in some tweets. Listen to me, boomer. Some tweets. I'm gonna tag Nalivaychenko in some tweets, and you can meet him. He is a lawman's lawman, and he believes that there is criminal activity that that was organized to by President Poroshenko and his team to interfere in the American elections. That's what Donald Trump wanted investigated. Credible evidence, certainly enough as a predicate for a federal investigation. If you don't think so, then you're dishonest. If you think that they had all the predicate in the world to investigate the Trump campaign, then you are lying if you think this is not enough predicate to open investigation into Ukrainian interference in the United States with the cooperation of American Democrats who are working with foreign governments to upend the American election. Ladies and gentlemen, these are real crimes. We live in Russia. If this is how our government is going to act from now on, we live in Russia. Valentin Nalivaychenko certainly knows. Pay attention to Nalivaychenko. He's going to be a leader of what goes forward after the Democrats' bogus impeachment program fails. But right now, understand that it is eminently provable that there should be an investigation into Democrat and Ukrainian coordinated interference in the 2016 presidential election. No doubt. And if we don't do it, then we are more corrupt than Ukraine. I'll be right back after these messages here on Still Standing with Michael Caputo. Remember, that's stillstandingpodcast.com.
Still Standing will be right back with Michael Caputo.
Hi, welcome back to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. I'm really serious when I talk to you about this. I'm going to catch a lot of crap for it. I don't care. Maybe I wouldn't have done this if the Russia investigations hadn't happened. I would have never volunteered for the beating that my family took during the bogus Russia investigations. But we've been through so much and I've been called so many names that my family and I, we know how to survive in hard times. We've proven ourselves to be an integral unit. We've had some breakdowns here and there. Some of us have made some mistakes, but my family is standing tall together. And when I understood that Joe Biden and the Poroshenko regime were going to get away with what I consider to be federal crimes, U.S. and Ukrainian federal crimes, I thought, well, we've already taken so much of a beating as a family. We've proven we're pretty callous to it. And if nobody else is going to do this, well, then I'm going to do it. I went forward, and while I was doing all the research and filming the Ukraine hoax, which is going to be on OAN Saturday and Sunday, 25th and 26th of January at 10 p.m., OAN investigates the Ukraine hoax with Michael Caputo. So proud to be associated with OAN. Thank you very much to Charles Herring and Neil McCabe and Jack Posobiec and everybody over there who've helped me put this together. And I want to thank a few other people as well, because I'm going to be talking about this Ukraine stuff for a while. And if you want some ideas as to how to understand this, when I wrote this book, Hank, I came up with 10 questions that any investigator would need to ask the Bidens, the federal government, the Department of Treasury, the Department of State. You know, I believe that there were diplomats in Kiev working on in order to coordinate this interference by the Poroshenko regime. I believe that. And I go through that in the film and in my book. I think it's going to be a topic that's not going away. The Democrats want it to go away. But when the impeachment trial is over, and it will be over sooner or later, they'll be standing there left naked with no other way to distract the American people unless they create some other crisis, another hoax. The Russia hoax, the Ukraine hoax, and then what? You know, the Bahamian hoax. That's next. But Catherine Barzicki, Breeze Lover, I love these online personas, and Frank Butry, I want to thank you guys, as well as Scott McRae, new executive producers at Still Standing. We call our donors at patreon.com our executive producers because, well, there are some who are really investing. I really appreciate it. And others just trying to pay what they can to keep it going. It means a lot to me personally that you're interested enough in this content that you want to pay for it. I want to thank our other executive producers, John Seifert, Henry Wotazek, Susan Havey, Thomas Fulton, Sonia Carlin, Samantha Lynn, Brian Pazdursky, Jack Bromwich, Jordan Gostomsky, Julie Rachel, Susan Stevens, Patty Freeling, Bill Grant, executive producers Mark Berry and Gary Stokes as well. All you guys are really great supporters. I really appreciate it here at stillstandingpodcast.com. But I got a couple of emails at stillstandingpodcast.com, but also at Patreon and the other platforms where this podcast is hosted. One from this fella, I'm assuming Breeze Lover, wrote this recently. I watched the impeachment sham trial today from the beginning to end. If you did too, Michael, you know that what the last hours entailed. What a shift show. I love that line. That's a Roger Stone line, by the way. Unbelievable. Justice Roberts is going to be very tired in the morning. Enjoyed your podcast very much and shared it with my friends today on Facebook prior to listening myself. I knew it would be good. Thank you for all you do. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really do. I also, it's very cool. If you're a listener to this podcast, you know that during the break while I was finishing my book and my film, by the way, go to theukrainehoax.com and you can buy my book and the film which will be premiered tonight, Saturday and Sunday, January 25th and 26th on One American News at 10 p.m. You can check your cable guide to find where that is. But if you miss it, you can purchase it at theukrainehoax.com. I'm going to sell a director's cut there. But during my break, one of the guys who listens to the podcast named Charles McDonald, contacted my producer, Sean Dwyer, and said, hey, you know, I like the podcast and I'm a professional voiceover guy. Can I do the voiceover? And sure enough, Charles did a great voiceover, charlesmcd.com. I really appreciate it, Charles. It's very cool. It means a lot to me, your support, but also the fact that you're willing to put your talents out like that. You know a lot more about this than I do, Charles. And you know, as a neophyte, that this is a vertical climb for me. CharlesMcD.com. Thank you, Charles. Listen, this impeachment trial is going to go forward. The Democrats might end up snagging themselves on a legal problem that needs to go to the Supreme Court. It could go on for a while. We're not quite clear as to what the Democrats really think. I believe they're bluffing. I believe if the Republicans called their bluff and said, okay, you call three witnesses, anybody you want, and we'll call three witnesses, anybody we want. Do you think Hunter Biden would be good on the stand in the Senate? Ladies and gentlemen, the Democrats do not want parity with witnesses. They want their own witnesses and to be able to stop any appearance by Hunter Biden. But there are more. There's Devin Archer, Hunter Biden's partner in business, who also served on the Burisma board. Devin Archer, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know this, Devin Archer is an old friend of Hunter Biden, but they're not getting along. Yeah, maybe they're getting along in front in front of each other. But Devin Archer's no big fan of Hunter Biden, let me tell you. And if they called Devin Archer, ladies and gentlemen, Devin Archer would sing like a bird. Sing like a bird. I think it'd be very interesting. Hunter Biden would be, you know, sweaty and, what do you call it? Sweaty and twitchy up there, and it'd be great TV. But Devin Archer is the guy you want. He is. Because Devin Archer, I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, Hunter Biden comes from an elite family. This Northeastern elite, if you don't know it, I'm familiar with it, but I'm not part of it. I've attended weddings of the Northeastern elite during my wedding days. You know, when you're in your 30s, everybody's getting married, and some of them come from these elite families, especially if you're working in Washington. I've been to some pretty elite weddings where Yaleys passed the wedding, what do you call it, the loving cup, and only Yaleys could drink from it. You know, these weird Northeastern cliques. And Hunter Biden was a big Northeastern clique, Northeastern elite guy. Hunter, you know, Joe Biden obviously was ruling the roost in Delaware, and his power was felt throughout the United States, not to mention the Northeast. And Hunter Biden marched through life with a silver spoon right up his ass. And Devin Archer wanted to march alongside these people, but he's not one of them. He doesn't come from that background. He kind of ran alongside the wagon. And Devin Archer, he ain't happy about that. That's right. Devin Archer for witness. Let's run a campaign. Devin Archer for witness. Because he knows exactly what went down. Hunter Biden and Devin Archer, the tale between those two is an interesting story. One that I tell in the Ukraine hoax, my book. I don't really get into it in the film. It was only 50 minutes. You can't do everything. But watch the film on OAN this weekend, 10 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Or you can pick it up at theukrainehoax.com. You can buy the book and the film. The story I tell in the book is one that I told today in the second segment. The top lawman in Ukraine thinks that there is criminal activity involved in this Democrat/Hillary/Ukraine collusion to interfere in the 2016 U.S. elections. That's one half of what Donald Trump wanted investigated. That's why they snapped into impeachment mode. But next time, I'm going to talk to you about Hunter Biden, Devin Archer. Devin Archer for witness, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, it's going to be fun. I may not even be able to wait a week. Devin Archer for witness. Hashtag Devin Archer for witness. Anyway, so far, so good. I don't know what they're going to try to do to stop me from putting this stuff out there. Maybe nothing. You know, I'm a pretty marginal player in all of this. I've appreciated your attention. So thank you for listening to Still Standing with Michael Caputo. StillStandingPodcast.com. Sign up for the updates. Go to TheUkraineHoax.com. TheUkraineHoax.com to buy my book, buy my film. And you will understand that this Ukraine thing is criminal activity, and it is not going away. I'm here to tell you, it's not going away.